Okay, so everybody's got that? You're all nuclear experts now? Thank you very much. Thank you to our host. Thank you to the UJC, to the Reefs, to the Davises, to the university for having us here tonight. And thanks to all of you for coming out. I won't say I'm surprised that there's so much attention, but I'm actually gratified that there continues to be so much attention. This is an incredibly important issue. It is one that will remain important well after the shouting in Washington is over. And so I hope that you'll remain engaged on this. I'm going to try and get to the main points in the time I have, and then obviously be happy to talk about a few more in question and answer. The focal point of my presentation is to explain why we believe that this is not only a good deal, but that this is a very good deal. There has been a lot of information, some of it accurate, most of it not, thrown up about this agreement. And the facts of the details of the agreement are online. They are available to you. We encourage you to go to the White House website and read not just the agreement, but the commentary by the people who negotiated it, so you can understand for yourselves without having to go through talking points and fact sheets and smoke screens and lobbyists to try and understand what's actually in the agreement. But from my point of view, having worked on nuclear arms control agreements for over 25 years, there's no question that this is an unbelievably effective and verifiable agreement that does what the president tasked us to do. And that is to ensure that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. And I'm going to walk through how we believe that we've achieved the president's perspectives. The agreement is verifiable in ensuring that Iran will be at least 1 year away from being able to acquire the nuclear material it might need should it ever decide to build a nuclear weapon. So we've just gone through a lot of the details in terms of numbers of centrifuges. You can get into that if you want, but right now Iran would be within a couple of months, give or take a couple of weeks, of getting enough material to build a bomb, and then they'd have to go off and build it. That would take some additional time. That is far too short to mount an effective military campaign, an effective diplomatic campaign, an effective economic campaign. But a year, we believe, is a sufficient amount of time. And by comparison, from the day that Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait to the day that we launched Operation Desert Storm was about 7 months. So we feel that that's a reasonable amount of time, and it's significantly more than we have today, and it's significantly more than when we came into office in 2009, and I think that's an important point. There's been a lot said that, well, the president promised that, you know, a no deal is worth accepting a bad deal, or that a bad deal is unacceptable, and therefore no deal is better. There are multiple points throughout this entire process where we could have taken a bad deal. Right? There were a number of times Iran said, that's it. And the president said, not good enough, doesn't meet my objectives. Tough. And we went back to the negotiating table. And I was part of the process where the president said to Secretary Kerry, if we don't get these final things at the end, walk. Because the president knew that unless he got a deal that met his objectives, we would not be able to gain the support we needed in the Congress to ensure that this agreement moves forward. So I'm very comfortable with the fact that we have not accepted a bad deal, and in fact, that the president and the administration and our allies together was able to force Iran into a position where they had to meet our objectives. Now, how do we do that? Iran has three possible ways that it can acquire enough material for a nuclear weapon. We've gone through some of the details. Uranium. The Natanz facility is going to severely contract. It's going to have 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year continuous monitoring by the International Atomic Energy Agency. The centrifuges will not be allowed to handle any more than the 300 kilograms of uranium that Iran is allowed to have in their country. For right now, Iran has about 10,000 kilograms of uranium. That's enough to build roughly 8 to 10 nuclear weapons if further refined. 300 kilograms is not even enough to build one nuclear weapon. So even if Iran said, okay, let's go for it, they end up with a quarter of a bomb. So there's just a physical barrier to their ability to acquire a nuclear weapon for 15 years. Oh, and by the way, they're not allowed to enrich beyond 3.67%. You need roughly about 90 or higher percentage points of uranium-235. So the minute they go to 3.68%, they're in violation of the agreement in the first 15 years. And that leaves them well short of what they need in order to acquire a bomb. The Fordow facility, as was mentioned, it will be allowed to retain some centrifuges, but there's not only are they not allowed to do fissile material work, there's not allowed to be any uranium in the building. It's explicitly prohibited. So any uranium sample that shows up is a de facto violation. So they can do stable isotope separation, which has the added convenience of contaminating those centrifuges in Fordo, so they can no longer be used for uranium enrichment. So you basically take Fordo off the map for 15 years. And we're also going to have 24/7, 365 continuous monitoring of that facility, as well as the uranium mines, the uranium mills, the centrifuge production facilities. Which gets then to, it will get in a second to the third point, but the second pathway is the plutonium pathway. In some ways, this is the most remarkable, and it gets talked about the least. There was a great New York Times article on Monday by Bill Broad. It basically said, what we're really worried about is Iran producing a lot of plutonium. Uranium bombs are generally how people get into the bomb business, but plutonium is how they really take the next step into big bombs. And Iran basically gave up the ability to produce any plutonium. The Iraq reactor will not be able to produce enough plutonium to build even one bomb, whereas if it had been completed on its current design, would build enough, produce enough plutonium every year for 2 to 3 weapons. So they're being moved out of the business, and it's not just a question of us having inspectors there, it will be physically incapable of producing that material. The heart of that reactor, something called the calandria, has to be ripped out, has to be filled with concrete so it's unusable, and will be redesigned and implemented under P5+1 supervision. Then what we're really worried about, because quite frankly, very few people, I think, should be worried about Iran breaking out at declared facilities, because that's where we're going to have inspectors crawling all over the place, right? What we should be worried about, and what we have been worried about, and it's not, the Iranian opposition that out of these facilities, we've discovered them before the Iranian opposition went public with their discoveries, including Fordo and Natanz, is the covert pathway. But it turns out, if you can't produce centrifuges without us knowing about it, and you can't mine uranium without us knowing about it, and you can't mill the stuff, and you can't ship it, you can't build an enrichment facility. You can build a hole in the ground, which we're really good at watching because we have satellites, and we can detect those pretty easily. The Fordo facility that we announced in 2009 was at least 1 year away from being able to process any uranium. So we already had a year notice and public before they could even begin to handle uranium at that facility. Which actually, ironically, something the Iranians said, well, you know, we weren't going to do uranium there for a year. We're like, yeah, we know, that's why we confronted you now. And the inspection provisions not only give us confidence because of our own inspection capabilities, but because of the enhanced inspection rights that the International Atomic Energy Agency will have, their ability to go to undeclared facilities, and for them to have full knowledge of what's going on. And under this deal, right now, if we have a challenge, it's an ambiguity. It's a question. Is Iran doing something nefarious? Or, under this agreement, if it's not within the contours of an agreement, of this agreement, it's a violation. There is no debate. And we can reimpose sanctions. So I'll get to that in a second, and I'll stick to my time. So a couple of the points that I know we'll get to really do get to the heart of this agreement, which is the inspection regime. It's really surprising that the strengths of this agreement have often been used to criticize the agreement and point it to the weaknesses. And the 24-day is one that you've heard about a lot. Nathan mentioned Parchin. The IAEA has been wanting to get access to Parchin for 5 years. If this agreement were in place, they would have had access to that facility 4 years, 11 months, and 7 days ago. Because it is not that Iran gets 24 days to delay. In some cases, and under the version of the agreement, if there's an inspector in country, Iran can provide access in as few as 2 hours. But what they are not allowed to do is say, well, we're not sure, and hem and haw, and put up roadblocks. If the IAEA requests access, regardless of the debate, regardless of the circumstances, I don't care if it's the Supreme Leader's special private library, if the IAEA says we want access to that site, in no longer than 24 days, the IAEA must be given access, or it's a violation, and we can, under our own authority, wielding a veto in the UN Security Council, reimpose those sanctions. So anybody who tells you that, oh, Iran gets delayed for 24 days, ask them, well, how many days can the delay if we don't have the agreement? And that answer is forever. Now, the good news is that the things that we're looking for in places like Parchin, like uranium, they last pretty much forever. The half-life of uranium is 700 million years. Ali Hainonin himself, as he talks about the inadequacies of these provisions, admits that we have caught Iran through the inspection provisions already in place because they tried to scrub facilities and weren't good at it. Because uranium is hard to get rid of. And Ernie Moni, the head of the physics department at MIT before he was the Secretary of Energy, has validated these inspection provisions and believes that they are more than sufficient to achieve what our objectives are. I want to get to this point of side deals, because I think it's important to correct the record. AP has withdrawn their story because there were so many holes in it, and it was inaccurate. Iran is not allowed to self-inspect. Nobody is allowed to self-inspect. The provisions of the inspection arrangements between Iran and the IAEA are safeguards confidential because the IAEA negotiates safeguard confidential agreements with all of the countries with which they have safeguards agreements. Why? Because they are blueprints for how to invade a facility and steal uranium. How many guards are at the facility? How many locks? How thick is the door? How high is the fence? That's not information you want available. And for those people that are pushing for these documents, I say, okay, do you want the safeguards confidential agreements that we have with the IAEA out on the web? We have more nuclear material than anybody but Russia. Oh, Israel has safeguards confidential agreements. Can Iran request access to those? No way. The IAEA couldn't do business. We have not seen these agreements because we did not negotiate them. But we have been briefed on them because the IAEA appreciated the importance that the United States places on the validity of the IAEA inspection provisions. And we have briefed every member of Congress on what these agreements say. That is a remarkable step. The Director General of the IAEA himself flew to Washington and briefed the Senate Foreign Relations Committee members in closed session and explained to them why safeguards confidential is important and why we have confidence that the provisions we've worked out at Parchin matter. But here's the kicker for Parchin. Parchin doesn't do nuclear business anymore. What we're trying to get is a closing of this file that has been a roadblock to our ability to constrain Iran's nuclear program. And they said, well, it's sensitive. It's a military facility. You know, we have the military in our country is not comfortable with the IAEA going in yet. We've tried to find a way that doesn't force Iran to be politically exposed internally while still getting the IAEA the access that it needs. And if you're worried about whether this sets a precedent, the only precedent it sets is that the IAEA is going to Parchin. And in the future, if there's another facility like Parchin, these provisions that are worked out for this one facility don't apply. It is the provisions of the JCPOA, it is the IAEA gets in 24 days, and there's no right of refusal. So we can talk about that more in the Q&A. All right, last 2 points, and then I'll turn to the next speaker. Sanctions. There's a lot of discussion about sanctions. I want to make sure we're being very clear. We're not giving Iran anything, all right? This is Iran's money that they sold oil and had a right to that we restricted them from having through sanctions imposed over their nuclear activities. The sanctions that were imposed in the United States Congress and the sanctions that were imposed in the United Nations Security Council were designed to bring Iran back into compliance with its non-proliferation obligations. Are there people that rightly don't like Iran? You bet. And are there countries that have a right to be worried about Iran's going to do with the money? Sure. But those arguments weren't sufficient to force Iran's economy to contract. They weren't sufficient to cut Iran off from the international banking system. So when we said we want to impose these for the nuclear issue, and if we resolve the nuclear issue, we'll release them, that's the argument that stuck. And so if we now say, oh, well, wait a second, we got the nuclear deal, but they can't have the money, one, we've gone back on our word, and two, the only reason Iran is going to give up their ability to produce nuclear materials is to get the money. So do you want Iran to not have the ability to produce a nuclear weapon? You're going to have to give something in that negotiation, and what we've agreed to give is sanctions relief. Now, how much? It is not $150 billion. It is not $100 billion, which are numbers that are being thrown about. Iran had about $100 billion frozen, and about 50 of that is going to be tied up in bad loans and in contracts that Iran can't pull their money back, and they will get access to roughly $50 billion that's been held for many years. That's at the cost of having suffered hundreds of billions of dollars of economic losses over the last 15 years through these economic sanctions. By our estimation, Iran has roughly $750 billion of pressing domestic economic requirements that they have to fund. So are we concerned about what's going to happen with this money? You bet. But Iran is already funding terrorism. And Iran is already destabilizing the region. Money is not the constraining factor for Iran. We can talk about what those other factors are. So we don't like the fact that Iran's going to have this money, but we also don't like the fact that Iran has 19,000 centrifuges and 10,000 kilograms of uranium. So I view this not as a gift, but as something that has to be on the table for Iran to do what we want them to do. And importantly, Iran's sanctions can snap back. Now, there's a lot of people that disparage this argument. I would point you to the editorial written by the leaders of Britain, France, and Germany today in the Washington Post, which says they are committed to reimposing sanctions if Iran is in violation of this agreement. And even if they're not, the fact that we can reimpose it under this mechanism, which eliminates Russia and China's ability to exercise their veto at the UN Security Council, unprecedented in UN history, in my mind, is remarkable. It puts us in the driver's seat. So, does this deal meet the president's objectives? In our view, it does. Does it solve all of our problems with Iran? Absolutely not. Would Iran having a nuclear weapon or the near capability to produce a nuclear weapon make all of our problems with Iran harder to solve? You bet. So from my view, if you are worried about Iran, get them out of the nuclear weapons business and then let's go to real business and confronting Iran and their behavior in the region. But from my point of view, every single problem we have with Iran gets worse if we don't constrain their nuclear activities. And that, more than anything, is the driving rationale behind this deal and why I believe that it's very much in our interest. So I apologize for going a little bit too long, but I look forward to your questions. Thank you.